Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. On this show, we don't normally talk sports, but this past summer, it was August, early September, we were in Canada, my family and I, and we went to an IMAX theater in British Columbia, and we saw NASCAR 3D. I have to tell you, it blew us away. It was so extraordinary, so exciting, and it came across as such a wholesome sport, and we haven't been race fans, so this was new to us. But what was really neat was that the theater is filled with Canadians. And Canadians, with the current international scene, Canadians are not big fans of Americans right now. But the movie, the NASCAR movie, just made you want to stand up and cheer. Everybody loved it, and it's pure America. NASCAR is American. And so it made us proud to be there. Just this movie, celebrating this American spirit of competition and accomplishment. And then we look at video games that so many young people play, and these first-person shooter games where people end up, you know, shooting other people in the face, beating cops in the head, and so gross. And then there's NASCAR. We let our kids play video games somewhat, but it's neat to have them play a game where they're not killing anybody, they're not beating anybody, they're racing other cars. It's just neat. And so what an honor to have right now with us a driver, Kenny Wallace. I have a question for you. Why has NASCAR caught the heart of Americans?
Well, I think you have to go back hundreds of years ago when they had chariot races.
Right.
You know, I mean, men used to take horses and, you know, make little, you know, two-wheel units behind a horse and race them in a circle. So, I mean, you think about how far back that went. And then it just has, you know, grown over, you know, I'd say a span of 100 years. Mm. And, you know, the Indy 500 is a race that is an open wheel race. The cars do not simulate full bodied cars like you see on the street. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that race was back literally 100 years ago. And so racing has come a long way. But
and, Kenny, by the way, we're a Colorado radio show, but we have a large following in Indianapolis. We were on the air there for years, and I'm going there in January to do a seminar. So we have plenty of Indy folks who will be listening to this online. But car racing, when did car racing begin? I've heard it said that car racing began the day they built the second car.
Well, I would say you're exactly right. I think any time anybody realized they were building a car, competition started pretty quick. But, you know, as far as race car racing, when it got really popular was in the early 50s down in Daytona Beach, Florida. This gentleman named, we call his nickname was Big Bill France. And the reason his name was Big Bill is Bill was almost 7 feet tall, I believe. And he created what is now NASCAR. And it started out of Daytona Beach, Florida. And actually the first racetrack they raced on was the front straightaway was on A1A, which was, a highway. And then they would turn left, and the back straightaway would be on the beach. Now, they had to be careful when they ran the races because of high tide and low tide.
And by the way, A1A, I know it well. We've been to Daytona. Back when they allowed even normal civilians to drive on the beach, they don't let us do that there anymore, though.
No, yeah, they have to watch it because, you know, years ago, the people would take their cars, drive them on the beach, and unfortunately, there were too many incidents. But
right.
I think one great thing about auto racing that I would like to share with everybody is that we have church every Sunday at the racetrack, and it's really good. It's a family atmosphere, even though it's very hardcore competition, and we all know how hard it can get and how competitive it can get. But that's really nice for all the families, and just because we're on the road every week doesn't mean that we're leaving our families. And, you know, I have three beautiful children. They're all girls, Brooke, Brandy, and Brittany. I feel like me and my wife have done a good as job as we can raising them. Mm. And our house is full of love. So just because we're these race car drivers does not mean we're a bunch of grease monkeys.
That's right. We're talking to Kenny Wallace. Kenny, back the race day, right near the National Day of Prayer, you had the hood of your race car, number 22. Basically, the sponsor was the National Day of Prayer. And I have a question for you. When we look at NASCAR, There, so many traditional family values seem to come across. You guys pray before the race. The fans love America. It's good, wholesome family entertainment, not like the kind of thugs you see in the NBA or even the fights in hockey. These are guys that after a race, they're interviewed and they compliment one another. They're gracious. Why is it? Okay, I understand why racing gets people excited, but why is it that NASCAR has turned out to be so pro-American and so wholesome? What do you think?
Well, there's a couple reasons. Let me tell you the first one is that there are only 43 cars that can start the race, okay? So you're talking about a very, I'll say it three times, elite division. In other words, when you're in the NBA or the NFL or Major League Baseball, you're talking hundreds of players, hundreds, if not thousands.
Thousands, right.
Okay, so when you race NASCAR and you get to race in the NASCAR Nextel Cup Series, it's sponsored by the phone company, Sprint Nextel, and they start that race. When they start the Daytona 500, the largest auto race in the United States, along with the Indy 500, there will only be 43 cars. So to answer that question, why everybody prays and why everybody is nice, is because we're so appreciative. We are in a very small group, and we're humbled, we're thankful. And the other reason that we're so appreciative to our fans is that, you know, we recognize that without sponsorship and without the fans, that we can't do what we love to do. And, you know, and I really think that it is just passed down to know that we are not like other sports. You know, you see it from afar, like you're talking about. We watch that NBA ruckus, or we see people be foul-mouthed.
The Denver Nuggets.
Yes, if we, and I will be very clear and very explicit, I'm telling you right now that in our contracts, you know, it's moral turpitude is the word. Moral turpitude in our contracts. If we act like those ballplayers do,
right?
Our corporate sponsors, my corporate sponsor, Furniture Row.
Furniture Row, right here, Denver-based, 300 stores around the country. You just signed a two-year contract with them. So what does your contract say if you behave like an NBA player?
If I were to, you know, behave like an NBA player, Barney Visser, the president of Furniture Row, would have to release me, let me go, because I would be an embarrassment to Furniture Row. And, you know, we just have to really conduct ourselves in a good manner. Plus, it's a good thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's not just good for building a fan base of families, but it's the right way to behave. It seems like NASCAR is someplace you can go if you try to raise your kids right. You could go to a NASCAR race and you're not going to be insulted, or they're not going to mock your traditional family values.
Well, if I had a choice to act like what's been going on in the NBA or act like a NASCAR driver, I mean, I would rather be a good person and be good to people and help people where I can.
Kenny, you're involved with the Nextel Cup team, yet it's Furniture Row Racing. What's the relationship there?
Well, what happens is the Nextel Cup, it's a series like Major League Baseball. So when you say Nextel Cup Racing, what it is NASCAR. They are the sanctioning body, just the same thing as Major League Baseball. Now, my favorite team, the St. Louis Cardinals, where I was born and raised, is the same thing as the Furniture Row race team.
Okay.
Okay, so you have NASCAR, the sanctioning body. You have Furniture Row Racing, Barney Visser, who owns all the Furniture Row stores throughout the United States, some 330 stores. He decided he wanted to go auto racing, help promote the furniture stores, and he likes racing. So he is the owner of the race team, which is one of the very first times in auto racing that a corporate-owned team is owned by the sponsor. In other words, a lot of people, they acquire a sponsor.
Right.
Okay? And then they're always afraid that they're going to lose the sponsorship.
In this case, Furniture Row owns the team.
Right. So that's one of the first of its kind, and it's also a very unique team because all of auto racing is kind of like, let's say, Nashville, Tennessee. If you're a country music singer, 99% of the people live in Nashville because it's where, you know, all the representation is at.
The Grand Ole Opry.
Right. So NASCAR, all the teams, 99.9% of them are located around the Charlotte, North Carolina area. And that's because that's where all the talent is. That's where all the kids throughout the United States grow up and they move here.
So are you the furthest Western-based team?
Yes. We're going against all odds. It's something that Barney Visser envisioned. It's something that he wanted to try to do, and he is taking on a huge task, and I'm proud to be part of it. Mm-hmm. And the team is new, but it's a building.
Have you seen the IMAX movie NASCAR 3D?
Yes, it's awesome.
Isn't it awesome?
Yeah, I've seen it twice.
To have this theater packed at the British Columbia Royal Museum in Victoria on Vancouver Island, it's packed with Canadians mostly and some tourists.
Right.
And it was at the height of anti-American sentiment over the Iraq War in Canada, and you couldn't get a better ambassador for goodwill toward America than that NASCAR movie. I mean, people just were cheering. It was so neat, and it just made me proud to be an American there in a theater filled with Canadians and to see this NASCAR spirit. This is a creation of the U.S. of A.
Right, exactly. And I'm not going to get political by any means, but I have to state that these races, these NASCAR races, for example, when you go to Daytona for the Daytona 500, or let's say you go to Indianapolis for the Brickyard 400, we're talking 250 to 300,000 people in one arena. This is outstanding. This world record.
That makes Broncos Stadium and the Pepsi Center look like little high school basketball game auditoriums.
Absolutely. Now, with these large gatherings like that, it's very common for people running for candidates for any office to show up and be the grand marshal. And,
right.
And not just is NASCAR a good, wholesome sport, but it also brings in the good old American. And I tell you what, we are very patriotic, and you'll see that in all our, you know, when they get ready to start your engines. I mean, you know, the Army sponsors a race car, Navy sponsors a race car.
Yeah.
My good friend Kenny Schrader out of St. Louis, he's sponsored by Little Debbie Snack Cakes, but also on the car is Air Force. So it really makes you feel good.
Kenny, you come from a racing family. You have family members whose names are known all over this country. You've started in how many? I looked at your stats a couple days ago online, but it looks like you've had a few hundred starts.
I've got over 300 starts in the NASCAR Nextel Cup Series, which is the elite division.
And that's, like you said, you know, in the NFL, there are 43 guys on one team.
Right.
This is in the whole country, only 43 drivers in the whole country. And then let me ask you about your team. It's not just the driver, it's the team.
Yeah. I compare a race team to the space shuttle. You know, when the space shuttle takes off, probably got to flip 100 switches or so, you know, light everything up. And
Right. That's
the way a race team is. If the driver doesn't do his job and he's not totally physically fit or mentally fit, or if the crew chief isn't running the race team properly, or if the motor doesn't have enough horsepower, or if the body isn't aerodynamic, so it just goes on and on.
And the pit crew, the incredible orchestration and the efficiency, it's brilliant how it all comes together.
Yes, and the pit crew, they practice three times a week, even though it's a Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Monday, everybody relaxes just a little bit, and Tuesday and Wednesday, their specialty. These pit crews are not people that work in the garage. They're outside people that's all they do is show up and do the pit stop. A pit stop can either win you $1 million in the Daytona 500 or you can lose it. If you come in leading and you go out fifth, you might not win the race.
Right. Kenny Wallace, it's an honor to talk to you. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
I'm very thankful to be on your radio show. To Jesus Christ into my life back in, I believe, 91 when Alan Quickie lost his life. And, you know, just real happy to be on your show. Thank you very much.
Wow, what an honor. That was Kenny Wallace. Kenny Wallace, NASCAR driver. And it is neat. We don't do sports here at Bob in Your Life typically. But, wow, what an experience it was to watch that NASCAR 3D IMAX movie in Canada with a bunch of Canadians. And to see them basically cheering the accomplishment of Americans in achieving such excellence. It was exciting. And we're not a racing family, but hey, we're more interested in NASCAR now. Okay. What else? We still have time in this show. Christmas. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas. We did yesterday. It was tremendous. We had family over for breakfast. We opened Christmas presents. And then family stayed for dinner, stayed through the night. Sort of like, hey, kids, when are you going to leave and go home? No, I'm only kidding. We had an absolutely wonderful time. It couldn't have been better. Cheryl and I are blessed with young kids and older kids, the three young ones, and then the four older ones. And two of those older ones are married. We have two grandkids. So it's really fun. You know, we look at our kids like Zachary. He's 9 years old. We call him the oldest of the youngest or the tallest of the shortest. And there's about a dozen variations of that. But anyway, we had an absolutely wonderful Christmas. We read the Christmas story from Luke chapter 2 as we sat around the Christmas tree. And before we opened any presents, we read the Christmas story and just had a great, absolutely great, blessed time. A wonderful day. I hope you did too. Meanwhile, you got the ACLU out there. What are they celebrating this time of the year? Students at the University of Texas, in honor of the ACLU, instead of a nativity scene, they put up what they called an ACLU solstice barn on campus. And it was pretty funny, politically correct. Instead of Mary and Joseph, they had Gary and Joseph, of course, to symbolize the ACLU's support of homosexual marriage. And of course, there is not a Jesus in the manger. Apparently, the baby had been aborted. And they had, instead of angels, who do they have instead of the angels? They have like Marx and Lenin and Stalin. Roger Baldwin, remember him? He founded the ACLU, and he was a big supporter of the Soviet Union. And he would be asked, well, the ACLU supports free speech. Why do you support the Soviet Union? They don't allow any free speech at all. And he would answer in interviews, he would say, well, they're trying to achieve something so great that it's a worthwhile price to be paid. That shows the hypocrisy, right? Total hypocrisy. It's just like Planned Parenthood and the pro-aborts. They're not about choice. International Planned Parenthood has given millions of dollars to China's population control program, which involves forced abortion. Forced abortion, that's not choice. So they're a bunch of hypocrites. Okay, so anyway, that's the ACLU solstice barn instead of a nativity. And that's pretty funny. Karl Marx, in the nativity, he's holding a book, and it has on the cover child porn. Child porn. And so it's an excellent little nativity alternative. It's just really funny. I like it. The ACLU, and everybody knows what that stands for, right? The Antichrist Legions of the Underworld. ACLU, the Antichrist Legions of the Underworld. Or All Criminals Love Us. Is that it? Or Anti-Christian Litigation Unit. Whatever it stands for, it's a mess. Okay, what else? The Democrats are trying to decide where to have their convention. Every 4 years, they have their Democratic National Convention, and it's either Denver or New York City. That's what it's come down to, and they're really in turmoil over the decision. They were supposed to make this a week ago, and Howard Dean put it off until early January, and so we have a press release that we're sending out to the Democratic National Committee, and we're also sending this to the offices of Senator Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton's office in Harlem, New York. I'll read you the press release, all right? This is it. DNC site selection should consider, DNC, the Democratic National Committee, site selection should consider that Denver is the headquarters of the Clinton rapist protest. Before deciding between New York City and Denver as the site for the next Democratic National Convention, the Democratic National Committee should recall that Denver is the headquarters of the Clinton rapist protests sponsored by ShadowGov.com. That'd be us. Bill Clinton's rape of campaign supporter Juanita Broderick, and then we quote from the Wall Street Journal, quote, was an event that in fact took place, unquote, according to a Wall Street Journal piece, February 19th, 1999. ShadowGov.com has led Clinton rapist protests in 144 cities and confronted the president from Auckland, New Zealand to Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. On Denver's 50,000-watt AM 670 KLTT, Pastor Bob Enyart of Denver Bible Church conducted the only recorded media interview with Norma Kelsey, the nurse who found Juanita, bruised and sobbing, with lips swollen twice their size, shortly after she was raped. That worldwide exclusive interview is available at shadowgov.com at the Clinton Rapist section. Also find there articles and transcripts from Dateline NBC, The Washington Post, and The Wall Street Journal, which stated, quote, "To hear the details of her story and the statements of the corroborating witnesses was to understand that this rape was an event that in fact took place." Wow. And then the press release continues. Bill Clinton's executive privilege allowed him to sexually harass and assault women, and the vast majority of the nation's media refused to seriously report on or consider the compelling evidence that surfaced through FBI interviews of Clinton's rape of Broderick. The former president has paid for sex. Now think of this. He's the president. He was a governor, then a president. Bill Clinton has paid for sex with taxpayer money by arranging for government jobs to be given to women as reward for providing him with sex and to keep them quiet. For example, Jennifer Flowers was hired by the state of Arkansas in payment for her sexual affair with Bill Clinton, which, to add insult to taxpayer injury, also, when they hired Jennifer Flowers, they displaced a female black applicant who was actually qualified for the position. So they put Jennifer Flowers in there instead. And UN Ambassador Bill Richardson offered intern Monica Lewinsky. Now get this. This is one reason why leaders should not be involved in sexual immorality, because then they're subject to blackmail and to making decisions that are dangerous for national security. So UN Ambassador Bill Richardson, this is under Bill Clinton, UN Ambassador Bill Richardson offered intern Monica Lewinsky a position at the United Nations, not based upon her qualifications, but as taxpayer-funded hush money. Lewinsky was even offered a job at the Pentagon. How's that? Hillary Clinton's role in this demeaning treatment of women has terribly set back the cause of women. Liberals caused a national uproar over allegations that U.S. Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas told dirty jokes to Anita Hill. Yet in hypocrisy, as a community, liberals have refused to give Juanita Broderick the dignity of a full consideration of her far more serious and corroborated allegation. ShadowGov.com, this is the conclusion of our press release to the DNC Site Selection Committee. ShadowGov.com has marched 100 people in one of Denver's St. Paddy's Day parades with Clinton rapist signs, and our week-long Clinton rapist protest in Little Rock, Arkansas, turned the demeanor of the Clinton Library opening from one of celebration to mourning and frustration. You remember how Bill Clinton was in meltdown on the evening news that day of the opening of his library? How he just fell apart? He came unglued? It was replayed, 100 times in the media? And that was after 3 days, he was only there maybe the previous day and a half, 2 days, of us turning that whole celebration into a nightmare. 30 of us with huge signs. Clinton raped Juanita. We handed out thousands, many thousands of flyers, these yellow flyers detailing the evidence. We have all that at our website at shadowgov.com. So it turned the event, the demeanor of the Clinton Library opening, from one of celebration to mourning and frustration. It was just bizarre. Thus, ShadowGov.com invites the DNC to meet in the world headquarters of the Clinton rapist protests, right here in Denver, Colorado. Contact Pastor Bob Enyart, 303-463-7789, or see ShadowGov.com. So that's a press release. We're sending that out today, just in time for them to make their final decision. It's so funny that the union at the Pepsi Center, the workers there, you know, the Democratic Party, that's the home of union workers. Union workers love the Democrats and vice versa. And so the DNC asks the local union to sign an agreement that they will not strike during the Democratic National Convention. That would be hysterical, wouldn't it? Because the Democrats supposedly are there for the good of union workers, and then to have the whole convention come to a standstill because of a union strike, it'd be just so funny. So the local Denver union that runs the Pepsi Center, they will not sign the agreement. They just won't do it. And I think that's hysterical. I think that is so funny. So we'll send out this press release. We'll send it to the Rocky Mountain News and the Denver Post also, see if they're interested in it. But you heard it here first at Bob and Yurt Live, and you could tune in if you miss a show to our website, KGOV.com. You could check out our store. We have so many neat videos, DVDs, and Bible study albums. You could get 5 hours of Bible study on a single CD. It's pretty cool. It's called an MP3 CD. And we invite you to come to our website, check out the resources we have available that'll help us to stay on the air. And also, you can call us at 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. We could tell you about our Bible study materials. You can ask us for a catalog. We'll send that out to you. And Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, the best Christian school I've ever seen. Check them out in Arvada, Maranatha. May God bless you all.